Good morning. This begins the live broadcast day for Free Radio Santa Cruz, broadcasting at 101.3 FM and streaming live at www.freakradio.org. That's freakradio.org. If you want to hook on to our live stream, go to freakradio.org and follow the instructions for picking it up.
البرد وتا خالي محي
والله العظيم انت نحن سيدي كان طر خايفين مغرور من سكون
اي يا يان سين شراط
As you may have guessed from that delightful Middle Eastern style music, this is the Mideast Migraine Show for Saturday, Lizzie, Saturday, February 7th. It's my niece's birthday. February 7, 2015, and the time is 11:06 a.m., if that matches. Well, never mind that part, because actually, I won't be taking any phone calls, assuming any of you wish to call in, until the mid-program break. We go until about 1 o'clock this afternoon. May go longer. Actually, it's not very likely we'll go longer, because we're on the final chapter of the current book reading, the book being Freedom Sailors. Now, those in the know will know that the Saturday edition of Mideast Migraine Show, which comes to you every Saturday at 11 a.m., is dedicated to the reading of important current or quasi-current books about the situation in Palestine and Israel. My name is Ren Tawil, by the way. This is the Mideast Migraine Show, if I haven't mentioned that already. I, Ren, being your local, friendly Palestinian-American, am most indubitably bringing to you the Palestinian side of the narrative, primarily the Palestinian side. Now, it'd be perfectly understanding here. That should not be interpreted as the Palestinians are right about everything and the Israelis are not right about anything. It's pushing, as it were, the Palestine narrative to the conflict over there does not mean, and I truly make it an effort to do this, it does not mean that this is a total propaganda fest of all things Palestinian, although it may at times sound like that. I truly stand for peace and justice and one day reconciliation amongst the every individual of all parties, both parties, whether you measure that in nationality or religion, tribal affiliation, whatever. There's a lot of hurt going on both sides in Israel, Palestine. And I just put a strong emphasis on the Palestinian narrative because it, even amongst the majority of people who listen to this kind of underground community pirate radio, there's still an underlying and overwhelming message that we carry with us that Israel is the aggrieved party, that Israel is the truly oppressed nation here, and the notion that all they want is peace and security, whereas what they're doing is actually expanding both their influence and their control of land on a daily basis, on an hourly basis over there, and doing all kinds of things that are illegal and just plain wrong, which belies the notion that Israel is only interested in peace. So that's my way of addressing that is to push the Palestine narrative and give as accurate a view I can about what's actually going on out there. Because this as I put it, underlying feeling that everything is and should be about Israel is so embedded in us, so ingrained in basically across the American population and the population of other allied countries, that something has to be done to correct this terrible lack of balance. Okay, as I said, Saturday shows are dedicated to the reading of important books, unlike the other weekly time slot for Mideast Migraines, which is every Monday starting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Mondays at 3 p.m. is also Mideast Migraines, about 2 hours long. The book, the actual full formal title of this book, which I'm closing out today, is Freedom Sailors, the inside story of the Free Gaza Movement's first voyage to challenge Israel's illegal blockade of Gaza and how we succeeded in spite of ourselves. Edited by Greta Berlin and Bill Dienst, MD, both of whom, along with myself, were a party to this truly monumental, epic adventure in August of 2008. And Greta and Bill were two of the five main movers in establishing and getting the Free Gaza Movement up and going. The book is copyright 2012. This book is available in print at most online retailers. Copies may also be ordered at freedomsailors.com. Just go to freedomsailors.com to order your copy, or go to a favorite book retailer and ask them if they've even ever heard of it. Chapter 12, and now, seeing as this is the final closing chapter of the book, I'll forego, for the moment anyway, all of the self-congratulatory reviews and things, as I generally do read on previous shows where I've read this book, and get down to a couple of key things here, and then I'll finish the book. Now, if you're tuning in for the first time, or tune in infrequently, perhaps the first time to this particular program, the Saturday edition of Mideast Migraines, be it known that the readings, at least most of them, of the all chapters of this book, are in the archives for this program, located actually at two other alternate websites, radioforall.net, that's RADIO, the digital character for ALL.NET, radioforall.net, radioforall.net. Go to that website, type in Mideast Migraines in the box, and look up all the previous shows, which are roughly in chronological order, most recent at the top, and you can catch up with the readings. Unless, of course, you want to go out or send for the book so you can have it yourself in your own hot little hand. The other alternate website is Santa Cruz Media Center, Indy Bay. That's two words, Santa Cruz. Cruz is spelled C-R-U-Z. Media Center, Indy Bay, I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y. Just think, or Google Santa Cruz, Indy Bay, Indy Bay. And look for the word Palestine in the left-hand margin, or just check out most recent shows on the right-hand green column, which extends the entire length of the page, and you will see those recent programs there. No phone calls until the mid-program break. The ringers are off, and that's generally what I do on the Saturday shows. During book readings, I prefer not to be interrupted as to maintain the quality and continuity of the reading and to not break our concentration. If you do want to send a message of any kind to the program, use this program's email address. The name of the program is Mideast Migraines. The name of the email address is MideastMadness@gmx.com. That's G as in Gorgeous, M as in Malevolent, X as in Xerxes.com. No logical connection of one of each of those words to the other than the fact that it's GMX.com. Okay, again, the email address is MideastMadness@gmx.com. MideastMadness@gmx.com. You can reach me that way, too. Here is the closing chapter of Freedom Sailors. I probably should get smart, though, and give myself an allopathically therapeutic throat spray. tastes kind of good, actually. So as to keep my voice masterfully in shape here. Okay, it's only a few pages long, so I kind of feel apologetic for those who were tuning in and have thus far might have missed all the previous readings, but I just told you where you can go to hear the recordings. Go to my archives, radioforall.net or Santa Cruz Indie Bay. Final chapter, Freedom Sailors. Chapter 12, Epilogue. Previous chapters of the book generally are written by a lineup of participants of the voyage listed at the beginning of the chapter. This entire chapter is written by FGM co-founder Greta. We've all caught Gaza fever. Every one of us who works to send boats to Gaza. From August of 2006, when a handful of us started the Free Gaza movement, everyone who has joined us has been stricken with a bad case of the disease. It is chronic. It sometimes causes afflicted patients to insist that if just one more voyage can be planned to this small slice of the Mediterranean, we'll all be in remission. There is no real cure in sight, yet. Gaza fever has now attacked thousands of us who feel a passionate sense of justice for the Palestinians. The disease began shortly after Israel invaded Lebanon in 2006, as a group of us were in despair that the Palestinians, once again, were the forgotten symptom of Israel's grand designs. As the world watched the defeat of Israel by a small band of guerrilla fighters in Lebanon, Israel decided it would take its wrath out on the Palestinians, specifically the Palestinians of Gaza. Our small idea of sailing boats to Gaza to break Israel's illegal siege there has grown. We, who have traveled by boat to Gaza, come back changed, blisters of outrage forever marking us. Those who have supported us through donations, letters, and picketing in front of Israeli embassies, demanding Israel stop its war crimes against its civilian population, are also changed as they watched our small boats sail into Gaza five times, cheering us on our way. Will there be a cure? Only if the fishermen can fish without being shot and murdered. Only if their farmers can harvest their crops without Israeli military vehicles burning down their wheat. Only if Gaza has the same rights as every country in the Mediterranean, the right to free and open trade with the rest of the world. Then and only then will our severe case of Gaza fever be cured. A photograph of one of our participants in the 2008 voyage, OJ, is being welcomed to Gaza by thousands. 40,000, if you will recall, was the estimation of the crowd when we sailed in. Says she elected to stay and work in Gaza. For a while, anyway. Because of this first success at breaking Israel's illegal siege on 1.5 million people, donors stepped up and purchased a yacht named Dignity, which made four successful voyages to Gaza from October through December 2008. On its fifth voyage, as Israel was committing massacres on the people of Gaza in an attack called Operation Cast Lead, an Israeli warship deliberately rammed the Dignity three times while she was still in international waters, severely damaging the vessel and endangering the lives of the 16 civilians on board. Fortunately, she was able to make it to safety in Sidon, Lebanon, without sinking. We watched as Israel, in January 2009, deliberately bombed 1.5 million Palestinians into abject poverty, a man-made catastrophe bordering on genocide. Undeterred, we bought a fourth vessel, the Spirit of Humanity, or the the former Ariane, that was nearly capsized by the Israeli Navy as we sailed in emergency care workers and medical supplies in January 2009. The boat was forced to turn back in rough waters. On June 30th, 2009, while making another attempt to reach Gaza, the Spirit of Humanity, same vessel, was boarded and hijacked by the Israeli Navy. All 21 unarmed civilian passengers were imprisoned in Israel. Two of the passengers, who hold Israeli citizenship, were released. After about a week, the remaining 19 Spirit passengers were reported to their various host countries. And I guess that's 21 unarmed civilian passengers. I may have said 29. All told, 21. We organized for almost a year, knowing that sending in only one or two boats would not make a difference to the Palestinians and Israel's draconian siege on them. We determined that the only way for the world to wake up to the collective punishment inflicted on a civilian population was to increase the size of the boats and the number of people going. May 31st, 2010. While clearly in international waters, 65 miles off the coast of Israel, a small fleet of six vessels known as the Freedom Flotilla was lethally attacked and illegally boarded by Israeli commandos. Eight Turkish nationals and one American were killed aboard the Mavi Marmara, the largest ship in the flotilla. Another Turkish passenger has been in a terminal coma since the attack with no hope of ever surviving, and I need to insert here the fact that that 10th passenger, I believe on the very day, or close to the very day of the 4th anniversary of the attack, did indeed succumb to his wounds from the attack and took the short way out of his coma. He passed away. So there were a total of 10 fatalities of passengers on the Mavi Marmara, fatalities all inflicted by the Israeli Navy. Continuing here. On all other ships of this flotilla, the passengers were beaten, tear-gassed, some with broken bones were thrown on the ground and handcuffed. This act of Israeli aggression provoked worldwide condemnation and raised global awareness about the ongoing illegal siege of Gaza. 5 days later, the Israeli Navy seized the MV Rachel Corrie, a cargo ship carrying reconstruction and education supplies for the people of Gaza. Again, the unarmed passengers were forced to the ground, or to the deck, handcuffed and held on deck in the blazing sun, guarded by dogs and heavily armed Israeli commandos. We were not going to be stopped and spent another year organizing Freedom Flotilla II, a larger fleet with more than 32 countries involved. We were going to sail on the anniversary of the murders of our passengers in May 2010. However, Israel and the United States outsourced the occupation to Greece, where most of the boats were moored, and we were stopped before we could pull out of port. However, we made our point that a band of international activists could and did drive major governments into having nervous breakdowns over our attempts to sail to the illegally blockaded port of Gaza. As we write this book in the spring of 2012, another voyage of two small boats with passengers from Canada, Belgium, Denmark, Palestine, Israel, Egypt, the U.S., and Ireland was brutally stopped in November 2011. The boats were hijacked in international waters by the Israeli Navy while sailing to Gaza, then hauled into Israel, where none of us wanted to go, and our passengers rounded up and sent to prison, then deported. The reason? Israeli authorities say we entered Israel illegally. The chutzpah that it takes to come up with that excuse is mind-boggling. And a new initiative. Gaza's Ark is being organized by the Canadian Boat to Gaza, along with several of our coalition partners. We are pushing the envelope and turning the voyages around. We are pushing the envelope and turning the voyages around. Sailing a boat from Gaza into international waters and on to Europe, delivering products from the people of Gaza to markets throughout Europe. A small step for Gaza and a giant step for humankind. Nothing Israel will do is going to stop our voyages. We will continue to sail. As long as Gaza is blockaded, we will return. Unfortunately, the strangulation of the Palestinians in Gaza continues. Therefore, the work of the Free Gaza Movement and now many other partners is only beginning. And that is the end of chapter 12, the final chapter of Freedom Sailors. Now, obviously, the book having been published some 2.5-3 years ago, published and released, necessitates me following up on the open ends in chapter 12 here. Where can I begin? I think Greta did a really excellent job in describing the fever, the Gaza fever, that all of us activists, pro-solidarity activists, exhibited in becoming interested and ultimately hooking up with the voyages. As I mentioned, I accompanied 43 other people, including Greta and her co-editor of the book, Dr. Bill Dienst, on the first successful voyages of any vessels outside of the Gaza Strip or Israel in 41 years. The first successful voyages into the Gaza Strip, into the port of Gaza City, the first voyages in 41 years, which of course takes us back to the June 1967 war when Israel wrested control of the Gaza Strip from Egypt. In fact, Israel captured the entirety of the Sinai Peninsula from Egypt, which itself has since been, after long, rather raucous negotiations with the leader of Egypt at the time, Anwar, the late Anwar Sadat, even though Sinai was returned to that country, Gaza remained in Israeli hands until 2005. The following year, of course, 2006, in a free and fair, globally monitored election in the Gaza Strip, the Palestinians in Gaza chose to oust their longtime leading political party and governing agency, Fatah, which is associated with the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization, and instead they installed Hamas, which is a decidedly sectarian or religiously based political party, of course, that religion being Islam, now in control of the Gaza Strip. That was in 2006. Let me point out that Israel has invariably tried to convince people that everything was fine and dandy since Israel pulled its Jewish settlements and every last Jewish settler, illegal one and all, from the Gaza Strip in 2005. And as the Israelis will put it, what did they get back in return? Nothing but a bunch of Qassam rockets and other missiles flying from the Gaza Strip into Israel. Pro-Palestinian solidarity activists, by and large, consider those rocket attacks by Gazans, and by the way, as far as I can tell, most of those of the parties responsible for the rocket launchings are not the Hamas government itself, nor the Hamas political party, but they are splinter groups, other militant factions. I don't mean to make an excuse for those who launched the missiles by saying this, but it is important to know who is what and who does what. And as I began to say, those in solidarity with the Gazan Palestinians, by and large, consider those rocket attacks to be illegal under international law, to be a war crime, just as those same solidarity activists constantly decry Israel's actions against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, in the West Bank, in East Jerusalem, and to some degree even in Israel itself. Their treatment of Palestinians under their control or amongst their own citizenship to be illegal and often crimes of war. I'm going to be honest with you here. Although I agree that technically the rockets from Gaza are an illegal war crime and should not be happening, that is it. That is the extent of my expressing my stance on that. Beyond that, stand by here. Getting confusing. My voice is in terrible shape this morning. Beyond that, I can't blame them for firing the rockets. Are the rockets about destroying Israel, as the Israelis love to pronounce that to be the case to the world? Are they about threatening the very existence of Israel? Hardly. No. Not at all. It makes me sick to my stomach when some of these clowns like Howard Bloom and his ilk come out and the first thing they say about missiles into Israel from Gaza is that it is a threat to Israel's existence. Folks, look, Israel has utterly, and for its entire almost 67-year existence now, masterfully defended itself and expanding its territory control and illegal civilian settlements in militarily occupied territory to boot. It is expanding its holdings, its real estate, securing the lives of its Jewish citizens, at any rate, while continuing to kill Palestinians under occupation. Israel ain't going nowhere anytime soon. This should be obvious to anyone who pays a half a lick of attention to what's going on out there. They will point out that thousands of rockets have been fired from Gaza. This is true over the course of the time that certain parties in the Gaza Strip have had and used these missiles. And thousands sounds like an awful lot. It should behoove you to know that in the last 15 years, since roughly the year 2000, since roughly the time of 9/11 in 2001, fewer than 30 Israelis have been killed by these rockets. That's right, folks. In a roughly 15-year period, no more, fewer than 30 Israelis have been killed by these rockets. Operation Cast Lead, Israel's attack on the Gaza Strip in 2008, into 2009, started 2 days after Christmas in December of 08, killed over 1,500, mostly unarmed civilians, including roughly, I'm a little hazy now on those numbers, well over 100 children, if not a lot more than that. Children were killed in that first major attack on Gaza in November of 2012, which had another fancy-ass name for its supposedly defense operation. That war, November of 12, killed over 2,000 Palestinians. And just this last summer, over the course of some 50 days, Israel ended the lives of over 2,000 Palestinians, very few of them were armed, and virtually all of those only with small arms, rifles, etc. Over 2,000 were killed, including over 500 children, compared to fewer than 30 Israelis since 2000 who have been killed by Gazan rockets. I don't want to see this, and I'm not trying to convey this conflict merely as a set of comparative numbers, but when you do look at those numbers, it does give one astonishing pause about what's really going on. When I think about the places I saw, a couple of rather handsome hotels that were on the beachfront in Gaza, and various other high-rise buildings, not necessarily state-of-the-art construction, but at least when I remember the appearance of a city that Gaza City was, and I reflect upon these three horrendous attacks, murderous massacres, since shortly after our first voyage in 08, and consider the fact that some of these buildings are gone forever, it certainly gives me pause. By the way, it's 11:38 a.m. this Saturday, February 7, 2015. You are listening to the Saturday edition of Mideast Migraines on Free Radio Santa Cruz. ...101.3 FM, and streaming live at freakradio.org. We have just finished the final chapter of Freedom Sailors that I have engaged in reading for roughly the past 11 or 12 weeks, 10, 11 or 12 weeks. And I am providing a summary and personal comments on this last chapter, all four pages of it. Okay, if I can just maintain some semblance of continuity here. So, Greta in chapter 12 here in the epilogue makes it clear that the Free Gaza movement, though at this particular moment, apparently has no vessels in the water approaching or leaving Gaza, is still alive and well. We have literally hundreds of thousands of supporters around the world, including those who have given a dollar or so, if not much, much more, to the cause. We have significantly raised awareness of the crimes Israel is committing on the Gaza Strip, and Gaza's massacre alone of nine, ultimately ten unarmed, or I should say minimally armed, I'll explain that in a moment, Turkish sailors, crewmen and participants of the Turkish flagged Mavi Marmara vessel in Flotilla 1. That massacre also is very telling of the nature of the Israeli regime. This did occur in international waters. And now, when I say minimally armed, I'm talking about the fact that although all participants, certainly in our voyage, the voyages of our two vessels, the SS Free Gaza and the SS Liberty, and those are former Greek fishing vessels. We're not talking about big ships here. Vessels constructed for fishing purposes, refurbished and some, and partly not reconstructed, but refurbished and enhanced for our purposes, did sail successfully into the Gaza Strip in August of 2008. And I have to concentrate again here. Okay, so since those two vessels made it successfully and the Dignity its four voyages successfully into the Gaza Strip, those successful voyages, roughly a half dozen of them, took place before Israel's first of these last three horrendous so-called wars in Gaza, all launched by Israel. The first two, by the way, decidedly political in nature. The launching of the attacks by Israel itself occurred weeks before Israel's national elections in 2008 and 2012. And it is Bindon pointed out that, I think accurately, that this is basically the same kind of sickening bravado that George W. Bush, Bush 43, took his stance with in choosing to attack Iraq. I mean, that man, Bush, actually said in so many words, I remember seeing this on TV, he said, quote, "I want to be a war president." Bush wants to be a war president. To what end? It's hard to say. And then there's, of course, a lot of suggestion that Bush went into Iraq in order to get back at Saddam Hussein for a supposed attempted assassination attempt on his father when Bush 41 was president. This kind of political thinking and making an enemy out of someone in order to help secure his place in office, George Bush's place in office, is the same kind of thing that Bibi Netanyahu committed in both 2008 and 2012 when they attacked Gaza shortly before national elections. And what it really amounts to is, let's kill a bunch of Arabs, 1,500 to a couple of thousand, perhaps, in order for me, Bibi Netanyahu, to remain in office and get reelected. That sickening reality of global and local politics. So, Greta mentions here that, as she says in this paragraph, only if there, the Palestinian fishermen in the Gaza Strip can fish without being shot at and murdered, only if their farmers can harvest their crops without Israeli military vehicles burning down their wheat, only if Gaza has the same rights as every country in the, on the Mediterranean, the right to free and open trade with the rest of the world, then and only then will our severe case of Gaza fever be cured. The chapter I read last week, written by the venerable participant in our voyage in 2008, David K. Schermerhorn. Mr. Schermerhorn went into considerable length about how the Israelis are in the process and have for some years now been in the process of stealing the Gaza's natural gas fields in Gazan territorial waters, in Gaza's waters, according to international law as it's mapped out, and preventing the Gazans from acquiring this natural resource, which does belong to them by right. And Mr. Schermerhorn laid out the case and described how this stealing of Gaza's natural gas is the real reason for the illegal blockade. So for some years now, going back to before Hamas came into power in 2006, a number of interesting things began happening a few years before Hamas even came to power. Now, yeah, I was talking about how Israel likes to talk about its the fact that it has to do something about the rockets coming from the Gaza Strip. And the Gazans know full well that they're not going to destroy Israel with these rockets. They're used as a political weapon. They are indeed used to harass, and generally by chance, since they are minimally guided or unguided missiles. Basically, you launch them, pointing them more or less straight in terms of distance and trajectory, and then the missiles are pretty much on their own, whether they reach Ashkelon, other areas of the Negev Desert, possibly areas close to Tel Aviv and its airport. They're launching these missiles as a political weapon in response to specific crimes that Israel commits against Gaza. Israel wants to describe these attacks, these missile attacks, as a form of harassment, supposedly a way to destroy Israel, and everyone knows damn well Israel is not going to be destroyed as a whole by these missiles. But Israel has, for some time before the rocket launchings began, probably in 06, late 05 or 06, in response to specific crimes committed by Israel, by the shooting of Palestinians in Gaza, by Israeli soldiers, their so-called defense forces, Israel's so-called defense forces, they're more like occupation forces, firing from the Israeli side of the line into the Gaza Strip, often just for fun or for training or for target practice, and many times there have been countless incursions of soldiers entering the Gaza Strip at the borders, sometimes with tanks and big guns, and harassing the population and killing many of its people, including children. And this is not including the three major massacres committed by Israel in 08, 09, in 12, and just this past summer in 2014. Not including those incursions which have killed, I believe, over 5,000 in total Palestinians now, including many hundreds of children. The aside from those three attacks, Israel has committed many, many breaches of the border, and generally unprovoked. And I think that this has a lot to do with the fact that they want to, once again, even though Israel, to much international PR and ballyhoo, withdrew its Jewish settlers in 2005, Israel still wants the Gaza Strip back. They certainly want. What are the arguments for this? Well, as I said, and as I spelled out in Schermerhorn's chapter last week, this has every bit to do with the fact that Israel wants complete and unfettered access to oil fields, which currently, under international law, belong to the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And if they can succeed in driving out, and to some degree in doing away with the very lives of killing the Palestinians in Gaza, if they can drive the rest of them out or keep them at a minimal population, Israel can once again reacquire the Gaza Strip, therefore allowing them, ultimately, after various political shenanigans, to, forgive my use of the word shenanigan, to once again control that undersea resource of natural gas and, as I said, have unfettered access to it. And let's see, the other thing about, there's the natural gas under the sea, and then there's also just a simple question of real estate. The Gaza coast, as polluted, as pockmarked, and as radically undeveloped as it is, because no one, including the Hamas government, has the resources to do any major facelift of that potential resort real estate there, that real estate is coveted by Israel, and they know that they can make a killing, as they've done in Tel Aviv, and to some degree in Haifa, and perhaps other places along the coast, turning it into a kind of extension of the Israeli Riviera on the Mediterranean Sea there. So that's, in my mind, that's pretty much what that's about. In the meantime, Israel commits these crimes of political assassinations, and not even necessarily in or anywhere near the Gaza Strip, but in other countries, the Israeli Mossad, its espionage units, its teams of assassins catch up to Hamas officials and emissaries in other countries, primarily in the Arab world, Arab countries in the Middle East, and the Israelis kill these people. They assassinate emissaries of the Hamas government, not necessarily for a specific crime associated with that particular emissary, but just as a way of getting back at Hamas. And hence you have rockets coming from Gaza. Not necessarily the best way to deal with that, but I want people to understand that generally every rocket fired out of Gaza into Israel has a specific and a declared purpose for its firing. We do not hear about these in virtually any detail in the West, in the United States, through the mainstream media. But there are specific charges that these groups who fire the rockets have against Israel every time they fire them. Whether one considers them to be a justification for the launchings of the rockets or not, the point is, Americans are generally not made privy to those reasons or excuses, alibis, whatever you want to call them. And the message that we're getting in the West here is that it's just because Arabs hate Israelis. They're supposedly trying to bump off every last Jewish resident of Israel. And, of course, this could never, never happen, not only in terms of the minimal impact that these missiles have made on the lives, ending very few Israeli lives, but before these missile attacks get anywhere close to what could conceivably be called a success in harming Israeli daily life at a catastrophic level, well before that, Israel has indicated three times in the past 7 or 8 years that it will incur a massive retaliation on the Gazans and commit the horrible war crimes of murder and slaughter that they have. So we've got missiles, however effective or efficacious or however justified or not justified the rockets may be, their impact is truly minimal on the lives of Israel. And this is the Palestinians' way of, to some degree beating their breast, but also trying to prove to Israel that the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip must be reckoned with and not just messed with. So that's what that's... no more talk about missiles right now. I want to continue my analysis of this chapter 12, the epilogue of the book. The Dignity. On its fifth voyage as Israel, while Israel was committing massacres on the people of Gaza in an attack called Operation Cast Lead, December 08 to January of 09... an Israeli warship deliberately rammed the Dignity three times while she was still in international waters, damaging the vessel and endangering the lives of the 16 civilians on board. Fortunately, she was able to make it to safety in Sidon, Lebanon, without sinking. I believe the Dignity was the one which eventually did sink and was lost forever while she was being towed for further repair or just to move it. And she upended and sank in rough waters while being towed. That happened sometime shortly after the details that I just gave you. Certainly by this time, after five successful sailings of first the Free Gaza and then the Liberty, and then the four successive successful voyages of the Dignity into the Gaza Strip, with absolutely no indication that the vessels were delivering anything lethal to Israel, no missiles, no mortars, no rockets, I can appreciate the fact that this might ultimately might be difficult to disprove 100%, but quite obviously the Dignity in our vessels, the first ones, obviously they were carrying no repair parts, say, for missiles or for their launchers or even copper wiring, whatever. They may have carried, some of them did carry minor construction material to give hope to the Palestinians living there and to help them remake their lives after Israel's many, many attacks and incursions. After our two ships and then the four voyages of the Dignity clearly did not carry any lethal cargo, lethal to Israel or to anyone in particular, into the port of Gaza City, certainly by then you would think that is just out of reason and common respect for Gaza's right to access their territorial waters, etc., you'd think that Israel would Simply relent and allow that form of commerce, minimal as it was, over the seas, through the Mediterranean Sea, to be left alone and to be left at peace. No. Israel used its Operation Cast Lead, ending in January of 09, using it as an excuse to continue to treat each of these humanitarian voices, these human rights voyages, to treat them as aggressive acts supposedly against Israel when they had absolutely nothing to do directly with Israel or against Israel. After the four successive voyages of the Dignity, no one ever turning up any lethal cargo, or Israel not receiving any reliable information that they did. After Cast Lead, Israel rammed the Dignity, forced it to turn around, and on every single subsequent attempt to send a ship or ships or a couple of flotillas, Israel continued to stop them by force. This is piracy at sea. It can easily be identified as international piracy committed by a nation state against people who were never interested and never deliberately sailed into Israel or even through Israeli territorial waters. Israel was stopping these boats from entering Gaza. The Dignity, the Free Gaza, the Liberty, the Spirit of Humanity, the Mavi Marmara, and the vessels which comprised the first flotilla in May of 2010. The same thing applied to all of them, the descriptions that I just gave. And then the Freedom Flotilla 2, often referred to with the slogan, Stay Human. That Freedom Flotilla 2, I believe, was the beginning of the participation of new or adjacent groups like the Free Gaza Movement, which is strictly ocean-oriented or Mediterranean Sea-oriented entrance to Gaza, attempts to enter Gaza. The Canadians came in with their contribution. Sweden, the Estelle, the SS Estelle, or whatever their first few initials are before Estelle. Denmark, these are all countries, and Ireland too, countries which began to sponsor their own sort of adjunct but yet independent contributions to the Free Gaza Movement, whether they were included in the second flotilla or not. I believe the Estelle tried to go in on its own. All of them were stopped. Every last one of these vessels not only were prevented from reaching their destinations in the Gaza Strip, they were stopped. They were boarded by Israeli naval commandos. In the case of the Mavi Marmara in 2010, 10 of its Turkish participants were killed, shot to death, some in the back, and I believe some even in the back of the head, indicating execution-style murders. So you have some who were murdered that way. And I believe it was scores of others in the same first flotilla, including the Mavi Marmara. The other five ships that were part of that flotilla were all boarded. Their passengers roughed up, bones broken, treated very, very badly. And there are even indications that I've read about, including Max Blumenthal's Goliath, vivid descriptions of how sadistically they were treated by the Israeli commandos in the course of doing this. It's just a big joke to the Israeli war makers. There are people killed and roughed up, wounded, injured, cuffed. Them, all the crew members, human rights participants, pledged to nonviolence, taken with each of those vessels, clearly against their will, Israel pirating committing acts of piracy by stealing these vessels, taking them into Israeli waters, and then claiming that the charge against these people was that they were in Israel illegally. They didn't want to go to Israel. They were forced into Israel. This according to the details Greta gave in this closing chapter here. Some of them held, the book says, for a week or two in most cases before they were deported. I know of several instances where a passenger, well, some instances anyway, where passengers were held for at least a couple of months on end, including my dear friend Teresa, who I sailed with, although she was on the other boat. Teresa of Scotland, who on a later voyage, which I did not participate in, living in Scotland, essentially in Europe, she had cheaper access to other opportunities to sail. She was taken prisoner, essentially, by Israel, and held for a couple of months, at least 2 months, as I recall, before she was eventually released. And none of these people wanted to go to Israel, but they supposedly committed this unforgivable crime of trying to go to Israel. No, they didn't try to go to Israel. It's like just, hey, leave us alone. We're not interested in Israel right now. Let's just get to the Gaza Strip with our growing and improving supply, cargo of supply for the Palestinian people. They were bringing, at one point, rebar and concrete, or bags of concrete, into the Gaza Strip so that they may rebuild. Infrastructure, buildings, etc. in Israel, in the Gaza Strip. And obviously with developing caches of cargo such as that for the people of Gaza, Israel will, they take all that stuff back along with the boats that they absconded into Ashkelon, or what's that other port? Also starts with an A. Wherever they brought these boats into, hold on to them indefinitely. Most of them clearly in Israeli hands. All stolen property. Theft by Israeli occupation forces, Israeli offensive forces. And that cargo of which I spoke, quite obviously inventoried by the Israeli authorities, military or otherwise, and then maybe some of them, portions of that cargo, would be forwarded back into the Gaza Strip. This is something else, other bad habits that the Israeli port authorities have, of bragging about the fact that, as they put it, thousands of tons of material is permitted through the land gates, the land entrances between Israel and Gaza. What they don't tell you is that thousands more, a greater amount, a greater percentage of badly needed material, construction, educational supplies, medicine, repair parts for hospital dialysis machines, for Gaza's sagging and often deliberately destroyed infrastructure, are often held back. So here Israel is accentuating their positive of, as they would say it, we permit thousands of stuff to go in, much of which wouldn't have to go in through the gates of Israel anyway if Israel would allow Gaza to direct and control their own commerce, be it by sea or by land, with Egypt, and to some degree with Israel. Shouldn't have to be in Israeli entrance gate hands. So, yeah, I know, folks. I'm contemplating doing a musical and phone-in break here very shortly. I still want to tie some loose ends together. The point I'm making is that Israel knew full well by Operation Cast Lead, which began in 2008, the end of 2008, that these vessels provided no threat to Israel whatsoever. And they have seen from the many, many vessels that they have absconded from the Mediterranean Sea illegally, international piracy and all that, that they contained nothing legal against Israel. They probably don't even care to list the inventory of material on board the ships and make it clear to the world. They just act as though Israel is somehow defending itself, and this is clearly not the case at all. Okay, let's have a little more music here. Let me give you the phone numbers. You are listening to the Mideast Migraine Show on Free Radio Santa Cruz, broadcasting at 101.6 on the FM dial. And streaming live at www.freakradio.org. The phone numbers, both lines, area code for Santa Cruz County, California, on the coast of California here, area code 831. Area 831. Line 2 is 427-3772. 427-3772. Line 2, 469-3119. Again, line 2 is 469-3119. The ringers are on. The lights are available to be seen by my eye. Please call. It's 13 past 12 noon. This February 7, 2015. You are listening to the Mideast Migraine Show, Saturday edition, finishing up the book Freedom Sailors. And I got a lot to get to before 1 o'clock here in making a truly as close as possible complete roundup of what this book was about, short of rereading the whole thing again. let me finish up with a few comments. So we've established, and certainly established for the state of Israel, that there was nothing legal, nothing lethal, nothing dangerous to Israel or its people contained on board these vessels. Israel's harassment and complete stoppage and seizure of the property, illegal international piracy, was pure harassment. They don't like people going in and out of the Gaza Strip, which is not independent, despite its freely elected government. It's not an international sovereign country, which is purely hostile to Israel. And Israel treats it as such. It's acting as though Gaza is trying to destroy the Israeli state. That'll never happen. Let me just point out that if Israel ever does become no more into whatever that incarnation would be, it can only happen from the inside. It's not from Arabs attacking. The Israelis have prevented that from happening rather dramatically and boisterously about every decade or so. The Arabs are not going to destroy it from out. Russia is not going to... Iran will not destroy Israel. The Israelis can take care of themselves. If Israel does evolve into something else, and hopefully it will be an evolution, not a devolution, it will be strictly from the inside. It will be from its own people, its own Jewish citizens and the other non-Jewish citizens, coming to the agreement that Zionism causes more harm than good, that it is an essentially racist activity. And Zionism is clearly a racist activity, a racist project, a racist enterprise and endeavor, favoring the Jews over non-Jews. The people who live there within its borders are going to have to come to the realization that a truly, truly democratic and secular independent nation, whether it continues to call itself Israel or anything else, is going to happen there. And that in that sense, Israel will be, as they have with tearful eye declared so often in the past, that Israel must not be destroyed. We must not let the Gazans or the Palestinians or other Arabs destroy Israel. They love to use the word destroy or destruction, as in the destruction of Israel. They love to tout that, bring out that hateful word. But there is another kind of purely benign, hopeful destruction, if one insists on using that word. It's kind of contradictory here. Destruction of the old order, of the Zionist order. A truly democratic state cannot exist under the guise of Zionism, or Zionism cannot exist under the guise of democracy, because it's not a real democracy, obviously. That is the only way that Israel can change from the inside, from its own people changing its mind, changing direction, and realizing what their form of apartheid is all about. And it is indeed apartheid. The Israeli Navy seized the MV Rachel Corrie, a cargo ship carrying reconstruction and education supplies for the people of Gaza. I believe that was an Irish ship, I think. Again, unarmed passengers were forced to the ground, handcuffed and held on deck in the blazing sun, guarded by dogs and heavily armed Israeli commandos. We're not going to be stopped. They tried Flotilla 2, which, of course, every last vessel was deterred from arriving in Gaza. And Greta closes out this chapter with projections for what is going to happen. She mentioned, as we write this book in the spring of 2012, voyage of two small boats with passengers from various countries, including the U.S., was brutally stopped in November 2011. Boats were hijacked in international waters. The reason? Israeli authorities say that we entered Israel illegally. And as she puts it, the chutzpah that it takes to come up with that excuse is mind-boggling. Everyone, including the Israelis, knowing damn well that these passengers were not shooting for Israel. I mean, they were not aimed towards Israel. They were bypassing Israel, and then they are kidnapped, literally kidnapped, by the Israeli Navy and taken into Israel against their wishes, against the wishes of the people who didn't want to go to Israel, and then they're charged with entering the country illegally. It's a joke with these people. Now, she mentioned Greta mentions the new initiative, Gaza's Ark, which at the time, in 2012, was being organized by the Canadian boat to Gaza, along with several of our coalition partners. We are pushing the envelope and turning the voyages around, sailing a boat from Gaza into international or through international waters, again, bypassing Israeli waters, and on to Europe, delivering products from the people of Gaza to markets throughout Europe, a small step for Gaza and a giant step for mankind. What is Gaza's Ark? Donna Wallach, who incidentally happens to have been one of my shipmates in 2008 and is a programmer here at Free Radio Santa Cruz with her monthly program, Freer Minds. Here's a dispatch from her that dates back to August of 2013. Greetings all. This is a good report. Let's be very clear. Gaza has been under, this is a couple of paragraphs of repetition here. Gaza has been under brutal and illegal Israeli occupation since 1967, meaning that Gaza has been under some form of blockade, siege, collective punishment since 1967, folks. I cannot ingrain that year enough. 1967, that the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have had to put up with this kind of crap here. As she says, the apartheid Israeli government has prevented the economic development of Gaza since 67. It was very easy for them to isolate Gaza, which they were unable to do in the West Bank until they started building the apartheid wall there. Now, West Bank and East Jerusalem are also under siege, blockade, collective punishment, totally illegal under international law, and just wrong. Again, this is from a dispatch dated August of 2013, a year and a half ago. Continuing. From 2006, a number of international solidarity activists worked together to organize the Free Gaza Movement, and in 2008, there were five successful boat trips from Cyprus, the ones that I was talking about in the book here, challenging the illegal siege, blockade, collective punishment on the 1.5 million Palestinians living there. Please be very clear, Donna says. The Free Gaza Movement boat trips were to break the illegal Israeli blockade and siege. The goal aim was not to bring aid, at least not initially, as I had repeated several times in the course of the book reading. The goal was not to bring aid. We put infinitesimal amounts of aid on the boats as a symbolic clue. The Palestinians were absolutely capable and able to take care of themselves. They don't want aid! Exclamation. By Donna here. They want to have open borders to travel, visit, attend university, trade, and make commerce with other countries like they did for thousands of years prior to the illegal occupation since 1967 and for the rest of historic Palestine since 1947. Donna says, I lived in Gaza for 4 months in 2008 and witnessed, she stayed behind, probably with her sister Darlene, for 4 months in 2008, and witnessed for myself the high unemployment rate, the restrictions of movement, the denial of access to an education and medical care, preventing farmers from farming their own land so that they can have a livelihood and produce food for the Palestinians in Gaza and export organically grown produce, preventing Palestinian fishermen from fishing in their internationally recognized waters, denying them their right to have a livelihood and provide good, healthy food for the Palestinians living in Gaza. Gaza, as Donna puts it here, is the largest open-air maximum security prison in the world. Palestinians living in Gaza cannot even get letters from outside Gaza. They can't have people come and visit, not even their own family members. And I want to reiterate Lauren Booth's description in Freedom Sailors, her correction of the term largest open-air prison in the world to what it really is. It is the largest open-air concentration camp, given all the details that I read about a few weeks ago. It is a concentration camp, which is to say prisoners, at least in the more developed countries, civilian prison facilities, their prisons treat their prisoners who have gone through a more or less legitimate legal system to become prisoners under that nation's law, they treat their prisoners far better than the Gazans by far are treated. Now, finishing up this dispatch from Donna, the only thing that the Israeli government can't control is breathing. Every other aspect of Palestinian life in Gaza, East Jerusalem and West Bank, is under Israeli control. This highlights even more the importance of Gaza's Ark. Talking about Gaza's Ark now, a boat purchased in Gaza from a Palestinian fisherman in Gaza. All the work on the boat is being done by Palestinians living in Gaza and supervised by Palestinians. The boat will be loaded with goods made in Gaza by Palestinians. The boat, Gaza's Ark, will leave Gaza City port with Palestinian crew and some internationals with the clear intent to establish sea trade with another country in the Mediterranean. Please do all in your ability to support and promote the Gaza's Ark project. In solidarity, Donna Wallach. Okay, again, I'll repeat the date of this communique, August 30th of 2013, about a year and a half ago. That was the first inklings of the Gaza's Ark project. I'd received a number of other regular dispatches since then on the progress of Gaza's Ark. And earlier, well, last year, roughly the middle of last year, I believe, shortly before the christening and the initial voyage of this Gaza's Ark vessel, not intended first to come into the Gaza Strip and then leave with people and goods, but all construction and activity happening in the port of Gaza City, and then initially the boat was to leave with passengers and goods for trade, to leave the Gaza Strip to ports beyond, across the Mediterranean. What happened in the middle of last year, 2014? A bomb exploded on it. Naturally, the Palestinians took measures, and I don't even think the Hamas government had very much to do with this, but the people involved in this project, which included monitors and help from various non-governmental organizations, the Gaza's Ark project in particular, being a non-governmental organization, an NGO, although the project was manned and directed, as Donna says, by the Palestinians living in Gaza itself, the Palestinians took some measures at security, preventing Israeli, frogmen, demolitions experts, etc., any form of disruption or sabotage by the Israelis. Despite that, and the night watchman, who essentially ran for his life when he received a threatening phone call, left the boat under cover of night. He was guarding it there. It was guarded 24 hours. He left it for 5 minutes. And then he came back since nothing happened, and then kablooey. Bomb exploded on board, obviously planted there by Israeli naval commando frogmen, scuba divers, skin divers. It did not sink Gaza's Ark, but a lot of damage was done. It would, that kind of damage that in this country would be considered economically as totaled, as in the boat was totaled, but complete starting from scratch and rebuilding the whole boat was out of the question because of their very limited resources. So the boat not having been sunk completely, maybe it has more to do with the fact that the water was shallow where it was moored at the time, listed halfway into the water, and that ended the initial christening and sending out of that boat. Folks, we're talking about the Gaza's Ark project would have having nothing to do with even looking as though it's trying to go into Israeli waters and into Israel. That we're talking about a boat that Israel won't even allow the Palestinians to complete and bring it up to specs, up to regs, and then dispatch it from the Gaza Strip so that they can have something of a seaborne economy, and Israel will still not permit that from going on. The current status of Gaza's Ark project is that they're still a long way from completing reconstruction of the boat, if that has been deemed feasible. Because I haven't heard it much in particular lately, the project may be dead in the water, at least for the moment. But, you know, this is the kind of hell that the Israelis bring upon the people in Gaza. Not letting them create their own economy. And then the Israelis make these horrible snide remarks about, oh, the Palestinians could have their own beautiful Riviera along the Gaza Strip if only, what, they try harder? If only Hamas wouldn't be, what, stealing from its own people? Not that anyone has that much there to steal from to begin with. Yeah, Riviera in the Gaza Strip. As though anyone has the resources to put that to implement that there now, particularly after their cities are smashed and literally hundreds of thousands of Palestinians are made homeless, not to mention the 2,000 plus who were killed in Israel's latest attack. All, you know, what is it? Was Israel punishing the Palestinians for not developing this Riviera economy? They've made it impossible for them to get anywhere. Even assuming they wanted to go in immediate times in that direction. It's truly sickening. Now, yeah. Okay, this is... don't do that. That's the situation with Gaza's Ark. Let's go to this dispatch from Greta Berlin, dated September of 2010. This is the same year as the 9, eventually 10 Turkish people were killed on the Mavi Marmara. That was in May. 4 months later, September of 2010, Greta sent this out, press release for immediate release, Palestine Legal Aid Fund, entitled, No One Was Safe, An Inquiry into Israel's Flotilla Raid. No one was safe once Israeli soldiers began using live ammunition on board the Mavi Marmara, says an authoritative United Nations investigation team into the Israeli attacks on the Gaza aid flotilla. Their report is now going to be considered by the 57-member UN Human Rights Council next week that has the chance to finally ensure that Israel is held accountable for committing what the UNFFM found to be serious violations of human rights and humanitarian law, including war crimes of willful killing and torture. The UNFFM found that Israeli military personnel used, quote, incredible violence against civilians, who the investigators describe as, quote, persons genuinely committed to the spirit of humanitarianism, referring to the people who were attacked. I also want to point out that Israel's own inquiry, in spite of some defensive statements, in defense of the commandos, was made. Israel's own initial military inquiry into the commando attack on the Mavi Marmara also indicated something along the lines of, I don't have the report right in front of me, but they also indicated that the these commandos exercised incredible willful violence, and I believe the word they used was they were overly enthusiastic, like unduly enthusiastic in their lethal killing attacks on these human rights workers. So even Israel, at least initially, probably before they began covering it up or dumbing down the military inquiry, came up with that report themselves. Okay, let's continue with Greta's press release here from September of 2010. Enforcement is essential, otherwise Israel will continue to violate human rights with impunity. The British passengers who were on board the Gaza-bound aid flotilla have today welcomed the findings of a UN inquiry, which found a strong prima facie case against the commission of several war crimes. She has in bold letters here, British passengers urge the UK government, the United Kingdom government, and Human Rights Council members to refer these war crimes allegations to the International Criminal Court, the ICC. The experts interviewed 112 witnesses in addition to receiving written representations by lawyers. Quote, this is according to the report, quote, all the passengers on board the ships comprising the flotilla who appeared before the mission impressed the members as persons genuinely committed to the spirit of humanitarianism and imbued with a deep and genuine concern for the welfare of the inhabitants of Gaza, end quote. The humanitarian crisis in Gaza is unlawful, stated the report, this UN report. As is the blockade, and as was the interception of the flotilla itself. These findings underscore the legal arguments put forward by lawyers who have been working with the passengers since 31 May 2010, who played a critical role in supporting the work of the UNFFM, supported in part by the Human Rights Legal Aid Fund. The mission recommends that the perpetrators of the attacks should be brought to justice. The mission has indicated that these breaches of the Fourth Geneva Convention could give rise to individual criminal responsibility. British passenger Laura Stewart, a 51-year-old housewife from London, responded by saying, "Let's hope this report can have some effect that might make Israelis think that they may in future be held accountable for their actions." Daniel Mockover, partner at London law firm Hickman & Rose, advising 29 of the 33 British passengers, said, quote, "It is essential that the British government now stops sitting on the fence and comes out very clearly in support of the protection and enforcement of human rights, including of their own nationals, several of whom were subject to some serious human rights violations and war crimes. That means the government must refer the war crimes cases to the ICC, International Criminal Court, without delay, and must demand in clear terms that the Israeli authorities return every single item of property unlawfully seized from the British passengers, failing which the government will take diplomatic measures and provide state funding for the passengers to bring civil and criminal claims in Israel." It's not known whether that those diplomatic measures and state funding ever came through. Continuing with Greta's communique here, her press release here, Mary Nazal Bataini, chairperson of the Human Rights Legal Aid Fund, said, "This is a huge first step, however. We still have a lot of work to do to make sure that these cases are pursued in court, securing genuine sanctions from the perpetrators and civil and criminal remedies for the survivors. As we all know, Israel has ignored UN criticism in the past and will continue to do so unless we take action to hold them genuinely to account. The nature of the attacks on the flotilla against international passengers creates unique legal opportunities to do so," end quote. The passengers in the Human Rights Legal Aid Fund have launched a fundraising campaign in order to ensure that cases are launched to make the UN's findings enforceable in international courts. And then the press release contains a number of contacts, phone numbers, email addresses, etc. There's one vital footnote here declaring the UNFFM interviewed 112 witnesses. Some of their accounts are available at www.humanrightsfund.org. Humanrightsfund.org, that website. Here's an annex. Key findings that Greta includes here. The 56-page report forms a comprehensive indictment of Israeli actions, which includes these findings, point by point. The conduct of the Israeli military and other personnel towards the flotilla passengers was not only totally disproportionate to the occasion, but demonstrated levels of totally unnecessary and incredible violence. It constituted, quote, grave violations of human rights law and international humanitarian law. Next point, systematic humiliation and violent treatment of passengers and the shocking and gratuitous use of violence. No evidence, I repeat, no evidence that the passengers fired or had firearms. No effort was made to minimize injuries at certain stages of the operation, and that the use of live fire was done in an extensive and arbitrary manner. Quotation here from the report. It is difficult not to conclude that once the order to use live fire had been given, no one was safe. It seems a matter of pure chance that there were not more fatalities as a result. Next point. There was a, quote, prevailing climate of fear of violence that had a dehumanizing effect on all those detained on board. Two passengers received wounds compatible with being shot at close range while lying on the ground. None of the four passengers who were killed in a separate incident, including a photographer, quote, posed any threat to the Israeli forces. Force used by the Israeli soldiers at intercepting the Challenger 1, one of the other five vessels in the flotilla. The Challenger 1, the Sfindoni, and the Eleftheri Mesogios was unnecessary, disproportionate, excessive, and inappropriate, and amounted to violations of the right to physical integrity, referring to forced use by the Israeli soldiers in the interception of those three vessels. The factual circumstances provide prima facie evidence that protected persons suffered violations of international humanitarian law, including willful killing, torture, or inhuman treatment, and willfully causing great suffering or serious injury to body or health within the terms of Article 147 of the Fourth Geneva Convention. Paragraph 182. Passengers were, quote, jeered at and taunted by the people on the quay in a way that passengers found to be, quote, unsettling and humiliating. Now, they must be referring to upon the vessels being forcibly acquired and their crews being taken prisoner, they're referring to people on the quay or the marina or docking facilities in whichever port in Israel that these Israeli commandos forced them to come to. Passengers jeered at and taunted by the people, Israelis, on the quay. Unsettling and humiliating. Passengers were, quote, beaten or physically abused for refusing to sign or for advising others not to sign, end quote, papers at the airport. Passengers were subjected to a series of meticulous searches, including strip searches, with a number describing the process as being, quote, deliberately degrading and humiliating, accompanied by taunts, provocation, insulting language, and physical abuse. The wife of one of the deceased passengers was treated with complete insensitivity to her bereavement. Extreme and unprovoked violence was perpetrated by uniformed Israeli personnel. Extreme and unprovoked violence upon passengers at the airport, accounts of which were so consistent and vivid as to be beyond question. Unarmed passengers were baton-charged at the airport. In the foray, the report states, around 30 passengers were beaten to the ground, kicked, and punched in a sustained attack by soldiers. A doctor, clearly identified as such, was kicked and punched. Israeli military and police personnel at the airport exhibited behavior, much of which, quote, was surely criminal under domestic Israeli law, paragraph 209. The wounded were handcuffed to their beds using standard metal handcuffs, and that sometimes their feet was shackled when they were held in Israeli hospitals. That must mean sometimes their feet was shackled when they were held in Israeli hospitals. The Israeli authorities confiscated a large amount of video and photographic footage, and that this confiscation, and I quote, represents a deliberate attempt by the Israeli authorities to suppress or destroy evidence. Paragraphs 240 to 241. Withholding and sometimes destroying private property of passengers, quote, represents both a violation of rights related to the property ownership and to the freedom of expression. In prison, passengers were subjected to sleep deprivation and denial of access to a lawyer. Acts of torture were committed by Israeli officials against passengers during their period of detention in Israel. So, this, again, authored, the press release authored by Greta Berlin, the co-editor of the Freedom of Sailors book, which we have now completed and under our collective belts. That, again, and this was referring to events just 4 months prior, in May of 2010, the report released on September 24, 2010. And, let's see, I have, yes, details about the attack on Gaza's Ark here, May 9th, 2014. Almost the fourth anniversary of Israel's attack on the Mavi Marmara and murder of 10 of its activists. This released May 5 of last year. Charlie Andreessen speaks about the attack. Charlie Andreessen is a member activist of Ship to Gaza Sweden, a Freedom Flotilla Coalition partner who is in Gaza cooperating with the Gaza's Ark project. He writes his personal reflections about the attack on the Ark last Tuesday, April 29. More than 1 year of work, and now she lies there. The boat we rebuilt to break the siege, resting on the bottom of the harbor. A month of struggling with authorities in Egypt before I was allowed to come here, and 8 months of struggling with the daily life and the work on the boat in Gaza, just to stand at the dock and watch the devastation. Just a few weeks before we were to sail to Europe, and I'm thinking of the work I had to leave at home, to follow my conscience, to do whatever I can for the people who are denied their human rights, and for no other reason than that they are Palestinians, that they were born here. Two explosives, two holes below the waterline. So easy. Next to no attention in the media afterwards. Business as usual. The abuses against the people of Palestine can continue. And there is a color picture here of the damage to the of the vessel. Its stern almost below the waterline here. Clearly, that's not the way it's supposed to look. Continuing with Andreessen's report, Palestinians, humans, approach me to express their support, saying that God will compensate me. But this project is not for me, it is for them. My sadness is that we might not be able to fulfill what we promised, not in time. As long as the illegal and inhumane blockade continues, we must all do what we can to lift it. If we want to live in safety and be able to provide security to our children, we cannot have a world where human rights are denied to some because of their ethnicity, or where fishers and farmers are shot at. This does not create security. Rather, it brings insecurity as well as being contrary to international law. We have to repair what has been destroyed and continue to challenge the blockade until it is lifted once and for all. I cannot throw away all of my time here and my work at home to achieve nothing. This project is not for me, it's for them. It is those who try to console me who are the victims. It is those who try to console me who are the victims. I was impressed by the response of fishermen, police, divers, and firefighters when the ark, the water spilling over its deck, was towed to shore. It started in the morning with cables connected to the ark. Meter by meter, she came closer and eventually she rose from the water. Despite the darkness of night falling, the onlookers stayed at the dock. Suddenly, from nowhere, two fire trucks rolled in, tearing the darkness away with their headlights. A short while later, the boat was raised sufficiently to reveal two gaping holes, well below the waterline on the port side. Police cordoned off the area, and the investigation to find clues began. But questions rise up in my mind, crying for answers. Can she be repaired? How long will it take? What will the cost be? But I don't ask myself who might be behind the sabotage. That will change nothing. Will she ever be allowed to leave Gaza? It would be so easy to ruin everything with one or more additional explosives. The media makes no big deal of it. But we can allow ourselves to turn our backs on these assaults. Can we allow ourselves to turn our backs on these assaults on human rights? Can we go fishing when we know that the fishermen of Gaza every day are in danger of being shot at and having their boats confiscated? Can we plant new flowers in our gardens without thinking of farmers in Gaza, shot at while they sow seeds by hand? Will we ever be able to feel safe, whilst we know one of the world's most militarily powerful nations to continue its occupation of another people's land and violate international conventions just because they are stronger? And how can we allow ourselves to believe the lie that exports from Gaza, constitute a threat to the occupying power, its military or their civilians? If we are to look at ourselves in the mirror without feeling shame, we must repair the ark, sail out to break the siege with a cargo of olive oil, honey, hand-woven carpets, solidarity, and human dignity. A cargo so threatening that they are willing to sink the boat, whoever they might be. Again, this was submitted by Charlie Andreessen, speaking about the attack. One more quick proviso, and then I want to finish up with a few important notes from the book. Charlie makes reference to the fact that the occupation of Gaza is ongoing here. It is ongoing. Israel will retort, and those who support Israel, various Zionists, will come back with, "Hey, we got news for you. We pulled our Jewish settlers, illegal settlers, out of Gaza back in 05, and then Gaza started shooting missiles at us." Even though Israel's harassment of the Palestinians in Gaza some years before that began tightening, before Hamas, before any missiles. Therefore, with the settlers gone, and the military not regularly driving across the borders into Gaza in order to maintain there the settler security, Gaza is no longer under occupation. That's what the Israelis will tell you. The United Nations, according to its own charter and its own versing of the laws, will tell you that the Gaza Strip is still, to this very moment, under de facto occupation because of the restrictions on access from the outside world through the land ports by air is certainly non-existent, or by sea. That is a form of occupation. Restrictions of the shipment of vital goods into the Gaza Strip, including, as I said before, medical supplies, repair parts, educational material and food, medicine, severely restricted. That is a form of occupation. This according to the United Nations. The likelihood of military intervention at the drop of a hat by Israel, the potentiality of that, and the harassment by air of planes flying, breaking the sound barrier at low level, which is bad for both the psyche and the hearing, the physical anatomical hearing, particularly of young children in the Gaza Strip. Those are all forms of horrendous occupation. So as far as I and my cohorts are concerned, the Gaza Strip is still under occupation, period. Okay, now it's actually 11:54 right now. Check that, 12:54 in the afternoon, 12:54 p.m. this Saturday, February 7, 2015. Obviously, I will not be able to get to all the details of the many authors and of the book and the participants. I may as well read my detail. No, I will in a moment here. First, I need to talk about the man from Italy who was mentioned and whose poem was read in the pages of the Freedom Sailor's book, Vittorio Aragoni. Vittorio Aragoni from Italy. We called him Vic. This is in the notes about the authors of the book. Vic had a wide experience in international charity work in the battle for human rights in Eastern Europe and Africa. In 2003, he made his first visit to Palestine, initially in a work camp managed by International Palestinian Youth League in Eastern Jerusalem, and later in Nablus in the Balata refugee camp. In 2006, he attempted to return to Palestine but was denied entry. Not to Israel, but just to Palestine, to occupied land. Held in Israeli detention for a week while appealing the decision, he was then expelled from the country. In August 2006, at the request of the European Union, Vittorio attended the first free elections in the Democratic Republic of the Congo as an international observer. He was on the Free Gaza during the maiden voyage and then stayed in Gaza to do human rights work. After being abducted and deported in Gaza waters by the Israeli Navy in November 2008, he returned to Gaza on the Dignity, another Free Gaza boat, a month later. He was there during the winter of 2008 to 2009. And his book, Gaza Stay Human, Cube Publishing, that's KUBE Publishing 2010, is his eyewitness testimony of the attack. Vittorio managed one of the most popular blogs in Italy at, and it looks like, okay, Vittorio managed one of the most popular blogs in Italy, www.guerrillaradio at ioblogo.com. That's guerrillaradio.io, B-L-O-G-G-O, ioblogo.com, guerrillaradio at ioblogo.com. On April 14, 2011, Vic was murdered in his beloved Gaza by a little-known faction there. His tragic death has devastated the activist and Palestinian community who knew and loved him for his joy of life. The second Freedom Flotilla was named Stay Human in his honor. And yes, I did contribute a small number of passengers to the printing of this book, taken from my own comparatively short not diary, but a short description of the trip from my point of view. Oh, what the heck. There's absolutely no self-aggrandizing here, but since I'm the one who's doing the talking, you may as well read this description of me amongst the many, many descriptions of the other participants here. I actually wrote this as part of my self-description, which I had to submit to the Free Gaza Movement as part of the process of my being admitted as one of the participants. Ren Tawil, United States. Ren was born in his mother's hometown, San Francisco, California, USA, in 1953. His father, Afif George Tawil, was born and raised in Jerusalem, Palestine, and was visiting the United States in May 1948. As a result, he could not freely return to the land of his birth and became a displaced person. Ren first became aware of the politics surrounding the quote-unquote Palestinian problem after the June War of 1967 as an eighth grader. I was an eighth grader, and has maintained an interest ever since. He was on the first voyage to Gaza in August 2008. I expect to have a chance to read the other, or at least portions from the other bios of the other participants, perhaps have a few other comments to make about the trip, the whole activity, and the book itself. Not very much at all. But we're done with Freedom Sailors. You can get your own copy at www.freedomsailors.com. Go to freedomsailors.com to inquire about getting your own copy. This book, as far as I know, is still also available on the internet. I just don't have the details in front of me of the proper website to go to. It was first available on the net, page for page, and I remember a year or so ago, one of my earlier shows, reading the first couple of chapters then. So, forgive the redundancy. Okay. It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Saturday, February 7. Join me next Saturday when I will begin reading Anna Balzer's Witness in Palestine. The book, in taking an initial look at the book, which is absolutely profuse with pictures, this is a total immersion kind of book, not just a bunch of text, but a remarkable array of color photographs, many, many of them, and maps. So I'm not impressing this upon my radio audience to taunt you or make you salivate over the fact that you won't be able to see the pictures. But the point is, Witness in Palestine by Balzer is a total experience book which may not be suitable for reading the entire thing over the radio. I suspect it will be, but because there are so many connections made to the visuals included, including the maps in the book, it might not be a totally pointed idea to read the entire book. But I do want to begin reading portions of it to you, and then we'll move on to something else. So look forward next Saturday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, Pacific Standard Time, to returning to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.3 FM, streaming live at freakradio.org, for a new book entitled Witness in Palestine by Anna Balzer. Of course, you may join me every Monday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for the weekday edition of Mideast Migraines. This is Ren Tawil signing off. Ta-ta.